and we'll get you in a country club prison. You can be back with your family before Troy and Olivia are out of high school.
Afraid, are you?
Eddie sighed.
You're not going to win.
Brian laughed again.
If you could see yourself, you'd know how stupid you sound.
Eddie stumbled forward as if struggling to stand.
If you kill me, Chris or the Pedrosas will kill you.
Oh, I'm not going to kill you. This little beating will be between us.
Brian placed his joint on the work table to save for later and stepped forward with the bat raised. Eddie swayed, and Brian pulled the bat back in the classic batter's swing, leaving the front of his body exposed. Eddie straightened, stepped forward, and kicked Brian in the balls. Brian's swing lost its force, and the bat clattered to the ground. Brian doubled over. Eddie shifted behind him, wrapped his arm around Brian's neck, pulled him into a standing position, and squeezed. Brian flailed at Eddie's arm with little strength, his body struggling to cope with the shooting pains in his groin. Eddie squeezed harder and said in a hoarse voice,
"You forget, Brian. I kick people's ass for a living."
Brian gagged and Eddie released the pressure, but only slightly.
"I told you I was there when your dad died, and I was."
Brian's hands patted against Eddie's arms.
"He came after one of the leaders I was there to get close to, and I stepped between them. I have a nice long scar on my side to remind me of the coward. Killed him with his own shiv. He cried like a baby."
Brian found a bit of strength and tried to kick at Eddie. Eddie squeezed his neck again.
"Don't make me regret letting you live."
Brian stopped kicking and flailing and went limp. Eddie held up Brian and tried to catch his breath.
"Just a little bit more."
He dragged Brian to the chair and dropped him into it. Brian's chin sank to his chest. Eddie went to the workbench, found the duct tape, and taped up Brian as he'd taped up Eddie nearly 24 hours earlier, ending with a piece across Brian's mouth. Eddie grabbed Brian by the hair and lifted his head.
"Fucker!"
He punched him in the eye.
"That's for my left eye."
He punched him in the other and almost fell to the ground with the effort.
"That's for the right."
He stumbled over to the workbench again, dumped packages of black plastic ties out, and noticed the joint. He put it between his lips and took a long drag. He closed his eyes and let the smoke settle in his lungs before exhaling. He kept the joint between his lips, took the plastic Lowe's bag and ties over to Brian. He put the bag over Brian's head and taped it around his neck. Over the duct tape, he tied Brian's ankles to the chair with the plastic ties to make it that much more difficult for the fucker, and did the same with Brian's hands. He patted Brian's pockets and found cigarettes, a lighter, and another joint. He pocketed all of them. He stood, smoked the joint, and watched the plastic bag go in and out as Brian breathed. When it slowed to every 5 seconds, Eddie tore a hole in the bag where Brian's nose was and kicked the chair over. He threw the duct tape across the room and stumbled out of the shed and into the twilight.
Chapter 48. Jack knew it was a risky play. The price, his brother's life. But he wanted to get Chris Ryan dead to rights. He needed to catch him red-handed. So he waited. And doubted. Chris played the part of grieving relative with the perfect mix of gravitas and grief. He held up Mary Doyle as she walked down the aisle of First Methodist Church, drugged up to her eyelids with Valium. Amy's mother followed, the children on her arms, and Joe Doyle walked behind them all, rigid, staring straight ahead with an expression of fury Jack suspected was more due to the DEA agents combing over his businesses
then for the death of his family, or his daughter being in custody for the murders. Jack stood at the back of the sanctuary and surveyed the room. He knew a quarter of the congregation by name and half by sight. Ellie, sitting near the rear, caught his eye. She raised her eyebrows and gave him the once-over. The uniform. He shrugged. She smiled slightly, dipped her head in prayer, and pushed her hair behind her ear. Jack hid his smile out of respect for the dead. Ellie liked the uniform. Kelly sat with her son Seth on the other side of the room, staring purposely ahead. Jack wondered vaguely why Kelly wasn't sitting with Ellie when he saw Ethan sitting next to Olivia, Troy, and Susan Grant. Susan turned around in the pew, searching for Brian, no doubt. She saw Jack and turned back around quickly. The fact Brian wasn't here and Susan didn't know where he was gave Jack hope his twin was still alive. The interminable service finally ended, and Jack snuck out the back before the family filed out, followed by the congregants. There would be no graveside service since Matt and Amy had made it clear they wanted to be cremated and their ashes sprinkled on Kyle Field at A&M. Jack shook his head. Aggies. He got in his car and drove off, not wanting to get sidetracked by the newspaper editor or gossipy citizens who wanted to know why Michelle wasn't there. Was it true she'd been arrested for murder? He waved as he drove past Lincoln Bishop, parked on a side street in his personal car. 5 law enforcement officers were on Chris Ryan. Jack and Bishop, a sheriff's deputy, Tom Hunter in an unmarked Suburban, and Minor Jessen, whose job it was to stay close to the Doyles and to alert the others when Chris Ryan left the reception at Joe Doyle's house. "He's settled in," Minor said through the radio 20 minutes later. "He doesn't look like he'll be leaving for a while." "Bishop, where are you?"
"Parked outside the house."
"Eastman."
"Drinking coffee at the Chevron."
"Hunter?"
"Doyle Industries."
"I have to stop at my house. Tell me as soon as he leaves."
"Roger."
A minute later, Jack pulled into his driveway, killed the engine, and got out of the car. He hoped Ethan was at the reception. He didn't want to do this with him in the house, but he would if he had to. Jack walked through the house and up the stairs. Julie lay on the bed, typing on her phone and grinning. When she saw Jack, the grin fell from her face.
"What are you wearing?"
Jack looked down, forgetting for a moment about the uniform. He didn't bother answering and held out the divorce papers. She looked from the papers and back to Jack.
"No."
"Yes."
"I'll take Ethan."
"He won't go."
"I'll tell him how you cheated on me."
"He knows who cheated on whom." "You shouldn't have left your phone last year. All of those messages and texts from your boyfriends. I've made copies of them all to present as evidence if you contest the divorce."
"My father will hire the best lawyer money can buy."
"Julie, for once in your life, take the easy out. Divorce me. Find some rich man who won't care what you do in your free time as long as you're there to look good on his arm and let him fuck you when he wants. It's the life you've always wanted to lead. Your mother's life, right?" She rose and walked to Jack.
"Do you think I'm going to let you take my son away and start a new little family with your pregnant girlfriend?" "Yeah, I figured it out. With a little help from Kelly. What will Ethan think when he finds out?" "I already know."
Ethan stood in the doorway staring at them.
"I guess I should be happy you both want me around." "Of course I do, sweetie,"
Julie said. She moved forward, arms outstretched. Ethan moved away from her and into the room to stand by Jack.
"Don't touch me," he said. "Ethan, I wouldn't go to live with you if you were the last person on earth. If a judge rules I have to, I'll run away. I'll do a better job than you did, though. I won't be found." "Ethan, why are you acting like this?" Julie said. "I heard you." "Heard me?" "And Uncle Eddie the other morning. The walls are paper thin, Mom, and my room is right next door. Jesus, it's like he wanted to be caught.
Jack's stomach twisted. He put his arm around Ethan's shoulder and was relieved when he didn't flinch away. Jack held out the divorce papers again. The terms are good. Better than you deserve. Have a lawyer look them over and have him call my lawyer. Jack's radio crackled and Miner's voice came across. Jack turned it down before Julie and Ethan could hear it. I have to go.
Of course you do, Julie said.
Jack walked past her.
You haven't even tried since I got back.
Jack stopped in the doorway and turned. Julie's chin was lifted in triumph at her ability to reel him back in. Every time. Ethan, I'll be home late.
Sure, Dad. No problem.
Jack turned to Julie. You need to be gone when I get home.
You would leave your 14-year-old son home alone? The difference between him and you, Mom, is I know he's coming back.
Ethan walked out the door, and Jack followed. Chapter 49. The groundskeeper's shed sat 200 yards off the 12th green and 13th tee, on a gravel access road that led to the highway. A line of fir trees mostly camouflaged it from the golfers, a pathetic attempt to fool everyone into thinking the greens and fairways were maintained by mystical fairies instead of an army of illegals. The officers tasked with raiding the shed were dropped off at the end of the gravel road and ran, with only the moon to guide them, to the woods bordering the golf course. Not wanting to alert anyone who might arrive at the shed from the back, the cop cars and emergency vehicles drove on and waited at a nearby farm. Jack and Tom Hunter found Lincoln Bishop crouched at the tree line.
Is he in there? Jack said. Someone's tied to a chair. A plastic bag over his face. He's alone.
Bishop nodded.
The chair's been knocked over. I didn't see any blood, but I couldn't tell if he was alive.
Jack's gut twisted. He activated his radio and said, voice low,
Eastman, where's Ryan?
Still in the clubhouse.
Wait, here he comes. He's getting in a golf cart, coming your way. A voice came over the radio.
A car is turning down the drive.
Get the plate number.
Roger.
Eastman, Jack said. Is Grant's truck in the parking lot? After a brief pause,
yes, sir.
Where's Grant? Jack said to Bishop and Hunter.
No one has come or gone since I've been here, Bishop said.
Jack keyed his radio again.
Eastman, stay there and keep an eye on Grant's truck. If he shows up, arrest him.
Yes, sir.
A black Chrysler 500 with blacked-out windows rolled up to the groundskeeper's shed and stopped at the same time Chris Ryan arrived in his golf cart. Three men got out of the car. Two looked around the darkened landscape. The other walked up to Chris Ryan and shook his hand. Jack keyed his radio.
Time for the cavalry.
Pretty sure that's Miguel Pedroza,
Hunter whispered.
Eddie's made some high-level enemies, Jack said.
You have no idea.
One man stood by the car. The other accompanied Ryan and Pedroza to the shed. Using the shadow of the woods as cover, the three cops ran in a crouch around the perimeter until the building was between them and the guard. Jack took out his gun and ran across the small open area and flattened himself against the wall. He motioned for Bishop and Hunter to follow.
This is San McBride!
Pedroza's thickly accented voice easily carried through the metal wall. Jack took a deep breath, ran around the corner, and stopped at the edge of the doorway. He peeked around and was immediately spotted by the inside guard. Jack raised his gun, pivoted into the doorway, and put three bullets in the man's chest before he was able to draw his gun. Bishop ran past the doorway to the edge of the building and waited for the outside guard. Chris Ryan and Pedroza turned. Pedroza's hand went into his coat.
Don't move! Hunter yelled.
Jack heard a sickening crunch and then a thud as Bishop took care of the second guard. Hunter stood to Jack's left, gun trained on Pedroza.
Pull your hand out nice and easy, Pedroza. Hands on your head. You too, Ryan. On your knees.
All clear, Bishop yelled.
The crunch of tires on gravel announced the arrival of the cavalry. Jack holstered his gun, went to Pedroza, and removed his gun from his body holster. He handed it to Hunter and cuffed Chris Ryan with a black plastic tie. Hunter shoved the gun in the waist of his pants and cuffed Pedroza. Jack walked to the man on the floor. Brian Grant lay on the floor, mouth taped, a plastic bag partially torn from his head. His bruised cheeks and blood-coated mouth couldn't disguise his expression of fear and regret. Jack lifted Brian and his chair upright, pushed the bag completely from his face, and ripped the duct tape from his mouth.
Where's Eddie?
I don't know. I was out cold when he left.
He's alive.
He was last I saw.
A swarm of police flooded the shed, guns raised.
Put your guns away, boys, Hunter said.
He lifted Pedroza to his feet.
I've waited a long time to get my hands on you, he said. No hablo inglés.
Uh-huh. Hunter handed Miguel Pedroza off to one of his agents and turned his attention to Ryan, whose smug expression hadn't changed.
Is Eddie hurt? Jack asked Brian.
Brian nodded.
Bleeding?
Doubt it. Chris worked him over some. He was saving him for the Pedrozas.
Jack bent over to get on Brian's level.
What were you thinking, Brian?
He said, voice low. Brian worked his jaw. Tears rimmed his red eyes.
My family needed the money.
And now you're going to jail.
Jack stood and walked up to Chris, who knelt on the concrete. A couple of sheriff's deputies started unbinding Brian from the chair.
You've killed four people and kidnapped a federal agent. And for what?
Chris stared straight ahead.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Jack inhaled and counted to 10, hoping the urge to pummel this bastard would pass. Bishop eased next to Jack, and somehow his 6'5" presence calmed him.
Take him to county, he ordered Bishop.
He nodded and lifted Chris Ryan to his feet.
I played against you, you know, Chris said to Bishop. Did you?
Bishop grabbed his elbow and propelled him along.
Baylor guard, 88 to 90. I was on the sideline when you blew your knee. Nasty injury. And here I am taking you to jail. Funny how life works. Hilarious.
Miner entered the shed as Bishop left.
Listen up, Jack yelled. Grab some flashlights. We're searching the surrounding area for Eddie. Miner, you're in charge.
He nodded in acknowledgement and started drawing orders to the other men. Jack turned to Brian, who rubbed his wrists before the sheriff's deputy cuffed him again. Jack pulled his iPhone from his pocket, opened the voice app, and hit record.
Brian Grant, you're under arrest for kidnapping Sean Edward McBride, Jr.
Jack pulled a card from his shirt pocket and read Brian his Miranda rights in front of the deputy, then ordered him to go join the search. Jack sat Brian back into the chair, pulled a stool up in front of him, and sat. He tucked the card back into his pocket and buttoned it.
Do you understand these rights as I've read them to you?
Yes.
I'm recording this interrogation. The resulting audio may be used in your prosecution or defense. Do you understand?
Yes.
Do you want a lawyer, or will you willingly answer my questions?
If I do, will it keep me out of jail?
Since Eddie's a federal agent, the final decision is up to the feds. But your cooperation will go a long way. And if you don't lie to me, I'll do everything I can to help you.
Even though it was Eddie,
I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for Susan and the kids.
Brian's shoulders slumped. He bowed his head. A paramedic came into the shed to look Brian over.
Want me to wait?
He asked Jack.
Give me 5 minutes.
I'll be at the rig, the paramedic said.
Your brother Kyle Grant stated he called you on Tuesday, November 6th. What did he say?
He told me Eddie was a DEA agent, and for me to tell Chris Ryan.
Not Michelle Ryan.
No, Chris. I told Kyle I worked for Michelle.
Since when? Jack said.
Monday. She offered me a job.
To make up for losing Matt's contract.
To keep me quiet about what I heard at the truck yard after the bonfire.
What did you hear?
Michelle threatened Matt.
Jack filed the confirmation of Fred's story away.
So you told Kyle you worked for Michelle. What did he say?
That her days were numbered and that Chris would take care of me.
What did you do?
Went to Chris.
Did you talk to Michelle at all?
No.
Did you call Chris? Go see him?
I called. Told him Kyle had a message. He told me to come out to the club. I came out and demanded he tell me what was going on before I gave him the message.
What did he tell you?
He told me Michelle was about to be arrested for murdering Matt and Amy, and she killed the man in the one-armed soldier's house.
Chris told you yesterday that Michelle was going to be arrested.
Yes.
Jack tried not to let his elation show. His theory that Chris had planted the gun in Michelle's dresser was looking more and more likely.
Go on, he said.
Chris said Michelle was going to go away for a long time, and he was going to take over. He offered to bring me in, but I had to show my loyalty by helping him take care of Eddie.
You agreed?
Yeah. I went to DI last night and waited for Eddie to get back. I talked to him, distracted him, while Chris snuck up behind him and knocked him out. We brought him out here and Chris beat him up, then left me to guard him.
How did he get free? Brian looked away, ashamed and angry.
He taunted me into it. Stupid thing to do.
Jack stood. All right, on your feet. Brian rose.
Is it enough? Will you help me?
Jack grabbed his arm and propelled him out of the shed. He passed him off to the paramedic at the ambulance when Deputy Eastman ran up, out of breath.
They found him.
Where?
Curled up in a ball and shivering at the bottom of the sand trap on the 13th green.
How is he?
Eastman shook his head.
High as a kite and beat to hell.
Chapter 50. Jack's hand trembled from too much caffeine, sloshing the scalding coffee onto his hand and the floor. Shit. He turned around, searching for a trash can, and saw Ellie standing in the door of Stillwater Medical Center's family waiting room. His burned hand lost its importance.
Hey.
She walked toward him, eyes on the coffee in his hand.
You okay?
Jack switched the styrofoam cup to his dry hand and flicked the coffee onto the ground.
Yeah.
Ellie picked up a thin paper napkin from the table, grasped his hand gently, and dabbed it dry. She noted his shaking coffee cup and glanced up at him in amusement.
Overdosed on coffee?
Jack smiled for what seemed like the first time in weeks.
Yeah.
Ellie tossed the napkin in the trash, took the coffee from Jack, and sniffed it.
Seriously?
She threw it in the trash.
The book bank's closed.
I should have thought to bring some.
She crossed her arms over her chest.
How's Eddie?
Collapsed lung, broken left orbital bone, 5 broken ribs.
Sprained ankle from falling in the sand trap, we think.
And Brian?
A couple of black eyes, courtesy of Eddie. Chastised. Saying whatever we want to hear and hopes to get out of this mess.
Will it work?
Jack shrugged.
I honestly don't know. Have you talked to Susan?
Not yet. Is Brian going to jail?
Probably. Ellie sighed and glanced out the window.
Poor Susan.
Brian cooperated. I told him I'd do whatever I could to help. Ellie smiled up at him.
Thank you.
They held each other's gaze for a long moment. There was so much to say, and never the right time to say it. Are you busy tonight? Jack said.
Work.
Can you make time to talk? Maybe meet out at your lake house.
Jack, I'm not going to sneak around behind your wife's back.
We won't be. I gave her the divorce papers last night. Ellie straightened.
You did? But it's only November.
I'm tired of waiting. And with you being pregnant.
I don't want you to do it because of that.
I'm not. What's the difference between now and 6 weeks from now?
The holidays. Ethan.
What's worse? Ethan seeing two people in a miserable relationship, or two people who love each other? Frankly, I'd rather model the latter for him. With you. Ellie closed her eyes, rubbed her temple.
This might be the worst scandal of my life, and that's saying something.
What's the scandal? She dropped her hand and looked up at him again.
Everyone thinks I've been dating Eddie for the last 6 weeks. Now I'm switching to his brother, and I'm pregnant.
So we tell the truth. We started seeing each other right after I arrived and stopped when my wife got back. With all this other shit going on, people won't care in the least about our personal life.
Don't count on it.
What are you saying? Don't you think we're worth it? Her expression softened.
Of course we are.
Jack grinned. So, tonight after work.
Tonight after work.
Ellie reached out and touched his uniform shirt.
What brought this on?
Jack looked down. I figured it was an easy thing to do to appease my critics.
Smart move.
Do you like it?
I don't hate it, but I like the suit better.
God, me too. I feel like one of the village people. Ellie laughed and dropped her head on Jack's chest. He pulled her forward and gently wrapped his arms around her. She did the same.
You're all bulky. Have you been working out?
It's the Kevlar. A familiar voice interrupted them.
Don't you two look cozy?
Julie stood in the waiting room door. Ellie stepped away, but Jack put his arm around her waist and pulled her to his side. Julie?
I knew it,
she sniffed.
You aren't even his type.
Apparently I am.
You'll bore him in a month. I'm bored looking at you two.
Give it a rest, Julie.
Do you even know which brother is the father of your bastard?
Jack tried to move forward, but Ellie held him back.
Don't. She's trying to bait you.
Instead, Ellie stepped forward and stopped in front of Julie.
I want to thank you.
Thank me?
If you hadn't been such a narcissistic bitch and left Jack and Ethan, Jack would have never ended up in Stillwater, and we would have never fell in love.
In love? He sure didn't act like he was in love with you when he was fucking me.
Funny. That's exactly what Eddie said about you.
Julie laughed, but had an appreciative expression on her face.
Remember what I told you yesterday morning. Don't say I didn't warn you.
Warn you about what? Jack said.
Regression to the mean, darling.
She looked the two of them up and down.
I give it 2 years. Tops.
Okay, Jack said, stepping forward. That's enough. Ellie. He put his arm around her and kissed her on the cheek. I love you. I'll call you later. He grasped Julie's arm. You, come with me. Jack propelled Julie down the hall.
I cannot believe you are leaving me for her?
Jack found an empty hospital room and ushered Julie inside. You left me, remember? Jack sighed. Did you come here to check on Eddie? She crossed her arms.
Yes. How is he?
He's got a long road to recovery.
Where is he going to do that? Here?
I haven't thought that far. I'm sure when Mom gets here...
Your mother's coming.
Jack looked at his watch. She should be here in the next hour or so.
Is she staying with us?
She's staying with me. You need to be gone by the time I get home.
I'm not leaving.
You can go to our house in Emerson if you need a place to stay. I left some furniture for this eventuality.
Eventuality?
Jack stepped forward. I decided to divorce you the moment I saw you at that hotel with your little photographer friend. I've got pages and pages of documentation about how we tried to get in touch with you and you never responded. I have every voicemail and text each of your boyfriends left last year. I have a dated picture of you with Ansel Adams. And I have the audio of you telling Eddie 2 days ago you wanted to continue to fuck him behind my back. If you even think of contesting this divorce, I'll trot every scrap of it out and plaster it all over the news.
Ethan would never forgive you.
You forget, Julie. I'm the one who stayed. It carries more weight than you think. Jack walked to the door. You need to be gone. Today. Or I take the gloves off. Chapter 51. Eddie opened his eyes and tried to figure out where he was. Well, Sleeping Beauty awakes. He turned his head and saw a policeman who looked remarkably like himself sitting in a chair next to his bed. Eddie squinted and licked his dry lips.
Barney Fife called. He wants his uniform back.
Jack grinned. Fuck you. Eddie lifted his arm, which weighed 100 pounds.
Get me some water, will you?
Jack stood and offered Eddie the bendy straw protruding from a sturdy plastic cup with Stillwater Medical Center emblazoned on it. The cool water flooded his mouth and slipped down his throat. He couldn't remember anything ever tasting or feeling so good.
Thanks,
he said.
So, I'm in the hospital. Give it to me.
Collapsed lung. Broken left orbital bone. Fractured skull. 5 broken ribs. 2 black eyes.
Damn.
And a sprained ankle. You fell into a sand trap.
Nice.
What do you remember? Eddie closed his eyes.
Brian at the truck yard. Chris with a set of brass knuckles.
He smiled.
Putting that bastard Brian in a chokehold.
No details. Eddie opened his eyes. Yeah, he remembered the details. In a halting voice, he told Jack how Chris confessed to killing Matt and Amy and setting Michelle up for it with each blow. Saving the revelation of his prime motivation till the last one. How Chris grabbed Eddie's hair and pulled his head back and said, I knew she was fucking you and didn't care. Until you fucked her in the woods at the bonfire. There's only so much a husband can stand, you know? Eddie said,
I asked him why not kill Michelle, and he said too quick. Too easy. I wanted to make her a spectacle in her hometown, just as she's made me one.
Eddie closed his eyes and turned his head away. His eyes stung from the oncoming tears. Of all the things he'd done in his career, he could say with confidence he hadn't killed anyone or been the cause of anyone's death who didn't in some way deserve it. Until Matt and Amy Doyle. Fucking Michelle hadn't been necessary to the job, but Eddie'd never been one to turn down pussy when it was offered. It was one of the perks of being untethered emotionally. He would have to learn to live with the guilt his selfish actions created.
The door to the hospital room opened, and a nurse walked in.
Well, look who's awake.
Nurse Lowe, Jack said.
Chief, you McBride boys are going to keep this hospital afloat, she said.
She looked down at Eddie and shook her head.
Your poor mother.
She reached for the blood pressure cuff and started her routine.
Speaking of mother, Jack said, she'll be here in the morning.
You didn't.
I did.
Nurse Lowe, could you double my pain meds? I'm going to need to be as loopy as possible to deal with my mother.
Nurse Lowe kept at her tasks, unimpressed with the request.
I hope you don't mind, I told her your secret.
Which one?
The heroic one.
Eddie's head throbbed when he nodded.
And?
She was crying too hard to say much.
Jack went to the other side of the bed and held Eddie's hand. I'll let you get some rest.
Did you ever talk to Ellie?
Jack glanced at Nurse Lowe, whose face was so blank as she inserted a needle into Eddie's port, she could only be mentally recording everything they said.
Yes. We've worked everything out. I gave Julie the papers last night. She should be gone today. Thanks for the audio file, by the way.
Sorry I had to do it.
I'm glad it's over.
Does Ethan know?
Yeah.
Shit.
Eddie closed his eyes and started to float. Don't worry about it right now. Rest. It'll work out. I promise. There was pressure on Eddie's hand. A feather caressed his forehead, and a soft voice said, I love you, brother. Eddie smiled and groaned his reply, before falling into a deep, painless sleep.
Chapter 52.
You know what the problem with modern-day criminals is, Anne?
No, Jack. What's the problem with modern-day criminals?
James Bond. Jack and Dan Newberry sat across the interrogation table from Chris Ryan, who stared vacantly at a point above their shoulders. He clasped his handcuffed hands lightly before him and smiled to himself.
Oh, Daniel Craig, Anne said.
Jack glanced at her and saw her blush. I'm a Sean Connery guy myself.
No surprise there.
But the problem is those Bond villains. They always think they're smarter than they really are. And they talk too much. Anne nodded.
They always have to tell Bond how brilliant they are and how completely they've bested him.
When they should just put a bullet in Bond's head.
Because he always wins.
He always wins. Chris smirked and stayed silent.
Of course, Anne said, cops are just as bad. They list every single thing they have on the criminal, and then, voila, the criminal breaks down and confesses.
Courtroom confessions are my favorite.
Damn Law and Order, Anne said. It never happens like that in real life, Jack said.
Our lives would be easier if it did.
Yes, they would.
So, Chris, we're here to give you some good news, some bad news, and to give you a choice.
You ready? Anne said. Chris looked between the two officers with amusement, but didn't speak.
I'll take his silence as a yes, Jack said.
Start with the bad news. Always better to get it over with, like ripping off a Band-Aid.
You've killed 4 people, Chris. 4 counts of first-degree murder. That's 4 life sentences, if you're lucky. More like Texas will try to execute you 4 times.
You can't prove I killed Matt and Amy.
He speaks, Anne said.
We have a piece of evidence you don't know about that will convince the DA to take it to the grand jury.
Chris looked interested for the first time. Anne leaned over to Jack and stage whispered,
This is where the police always tell them the evidence.
Mistake number 1.
Anne nodded in agreement.
We have other bits of evidence which alone don't amount to much, but taken together will surely be enough to indict you, Anne said.
We could indict a ham sandwich with our evidence.
We could.
Chris lifted the cuffed hands and inspected his fingernails with a bored expression.
What's the good news?
Oh, Jack said. I'm not finished with the bad news. You kidnapped and assaulted a federal agent. One of the best undercover agents the DEA has. That's 40 years easy.
No way the feds go easy on him, Ann said.
No way.
He looks sad, Jack. Give him the good news.
Let me guess, Chris said. If I cooperate, you'll see what you can do with the DA and the feds.
He watches TV, Jack said.
Yep.
That is one thing they get right, though, Jack said. So that's the good news. You cooperate, tell us everything, the DA won't seek the death penalty. Pigeon's already agreed to it. You remain silent, it'll be death row.
You're assuming I'll lose.
Jack grinned.
I'm confident you'll lose.
Chris shook his head.
You have no actual evidence I did anything. I'll wait for my lawyer.
You sure? Ann asked.
Last chance, Jack replied. The offer walks out the door with us.
I'm sure.
Jack shrugged and stood with Ann. They walked out the door and into the hallway. A sheriff's deputy went inside the room to guard Ryan as D.A. Pigeon walked out of the viewing room. Andrea Armstrong sauntered toward them, a shiny new briefcase clutched in her hand.
Hello, Chief McBride. I'm seeing you everywhere I go.
Ms. Armstrong.
Andrea, please. I've been retained by Chris Ryan. Looks like we're going to be seeing a lot of each other over the next few months.
The lawyer looked to Ann and Pigeon with raised eyebrows.
Sheriff Ann Newberry, District Attorney Oliver Pigeon, Andrea Armstrong, newly minted lawyer.
You just passed the bar, right?
Andrea's confidence wavered a fraction at being so transparent.
Don't be alarmed, Ann said. He's trying to make you think he's a mentalist. We looked you up.
Know your enemy and all, Jack said.
I'm alarmed you think I'm your enemy, she said. Not a good way to start a professional relationship.
He didn't mean that, Pigeon interjected.
It's a conflict of interest for you to defend Kyle Grant and Chris Ryan, Jack said.
Why?
Grant's testifying against Ryan. She furrowed her brows.
No. The agreement was Mr. Grant testifies against Michelle Doyle Ryan. Not Christopher Ryan. There is no conflict of interest. What is my client being charged with?
She directed the question to Pigeon. Pigeon hesitated before answering.
Kidnapping a federal officer. Assault of a federal officer.
You don't seem too confident, District Attorney Pigeon.
Pigeon grinned.
I think I'm going to like you.
Andrea smiled.
I'm sure I don't need to tell you, don't talk to my clients without me present. Nice to meet you, Sheriff, Mr. Pigeon. Chief?
She pointed at the door.
In here?
Yes, Ann said. Andrea Armstrong entered the room. The deputy who'd been guarding Chris skirted around the other three and went into the break room.
Pigeon said, Just like they said.
What?
I called a friend of mine, professor out at Tech Law School. She's top of her class and completely ruthless. Overconfidence is her weakness.
No kidding, Ann said.
Pigeon waved thoughts of Andrea Armstrong away.
Good call, not mentioning Eddie's testimony about Chris's confession.
I felt sure he'd realize his mistake with our Bond villain spiel, Ann said.
They're never as smart as they think, Jack said.
Besides Eddie's statement, all we have putting Chris at the Doyle murder scene is Matt's voicemail to Eric Sterry.
And any trace evidence they find can easily be explained away by family gatherings, Jack said.
What can we charge him with? Ann asked.
Feds will charge him with kidnapping and assault. Search the club. See if you can find any evidence of his book. We can charge him with gambling.
Let's see if we can't turn Kyle Grant or come up with some physical evidence before we charge Chris with murder.
And Michelle, Jack said. Pigeon sighed.
Drop the murder charges and amend it to intent to distribute and bribing a police officer. With the amount of drugs we found at her business and her confession about bribing Jessen, we can charge her with 2 felonies.
Pigeon said and walked away.
Jack sighed. I've had 6 murders in 8 weeks on the job, and still no arrests. He rubbed his face. Jesus Christ.
We have Matt's call to Chris and Eddie's statement in our back pocket. We put enough pressure on Kyle Grant, he'll turn on Chris to save himself. I know you want arrests now, but you know building a solid case takes time.
Ann put a hand on his shoulder.
You aren't going to get fired tomorrow.
If Joe Doyle has anything to say about it, I will.
Rumor is Doyle's being pressured to resign his city council seat. Might be a first, resigning a seat you haven't taken yet.
Ann slapped Jack on the shoulder.
Between that and your fetching uniform, I think your job is safe for a little while longer.
Jack chuckled and shook his head. I don't know that my job is ever going to be safe.
Come on. We've got to break the news to Michelle that not only has her dad betrayed her, but her husband has too.
Chapter 53.
I don't believe it.
Michelle's brow furrowed, as though trying to connect the version of her husband, Jack, presented, to the man she'd been married to for years.
Because you don't think he's capable of murder, or you don't think he'd betray you, Anne said.
Michelle considered for a moment.
He liked Matt and Amy. Apparently, he hated you more.
He told you that?
Bob Underwood asked.
No, he's not talking. But Brian Grant, Kyle Grant, and Eddie are. The feds have made a number of arrests at Houston Heavy Equipment.
Your operation is crumbling, Michelle, Jack said.
Go ahead and gloat, McBride. If Doyle Industries goes out of business, you'll have put 100 Stillwater residents out of a job.
You'll have put them out of a job.
You think they're smart enough to understand the difference? They'll see you, an outsider, coming in and going after a business and family who's done much more good than harm.
Debatable.
You don't get it. These people are willing to look the other way, to forgive a shitload of stuff from us they'd never forgive from others, because we're one of them. We employ people. We support the community. The other stuff never touches 95% of them. They can look the other way and take our charity with a clear conscience. They did it with Buck Pollard for years. He knew who to fuck over and who to coddle. He was a master at it. You're like a bull in a china shop. By the time you're done do-gooding the town to death, Stillwater'll be like fucking Detroit.
Thanks for the civics lesson, Jack said. Are you amending the charges against Michelle?
Bob asked.
It seems Kyle Grant is sticking to his story that you pulled the trigger on Vasquez and Morales, Jack said.
We've checked Michelle's calendar for October 31st and November 1st. Halloween night, she was working with the Meals Ministry booth at First Methodist's Fall Festival. There are at least 200 people who can account for her presence until 10 p.m. She arrived at work at 7 a.m. as usual and had conference calls and meetings all day.
We know she likes to do business late at night, Jack said.
If you'll remember, Bob said, there was a thunderstorm that night. Jordan, Michelle's daughter, is terrified of storms. She slept with Michelle that night.
Bob looked a little smug. Michelle's right eyebrow and corner of her mouth raised in sync, as if lifted by a puppet string.
I can tell you where Chris was at the time of both murders, if you're interested.
What?
Jack and Bob said at the same time.
You heard me.
Just a minute.
Bob leaned over, and the lawyer and client had a brief, whispered conversation. Bob's expression lightened, and he smiled.
Well, this changes things.
We don't know the evidence yet, Jack said.
Drop the bribery charges, and you will.
Not the murder charges, Anne asked.
Bob laughed.
Even if those would stick, which they won't, you'll drop them soon enough with this evidence. You need to call Oliver, he said.
Jack and Anne exchanged a look, and in silent agreement, Anne stood and left the room.
Now we wait, Bob said cheerfully.
Jack studied Michelle, who looked extremely smug. Thinking of ruining my career, Jack said.
Among other things.
If you didn't murder these people, I don't want you to go to jail. But rest assured, Michelle, you will be going to jail for distribution at the least. The feds are keeping me in the loop, and it doesn't look good.
We'll see.
You can mitigate the fallout. Tell us about your operation. Testify against your father. Michelle laughed. Haven't you wondered where your father is? Michelle pursed her lips and tried not to look interested. He hasn't asked about you once. Jack turned to Bob. Has he called you, Bob?
Mary called, Bob said, as much to Michelle as Jack. She's taken care of your children.
Have you forgotten your father gave us your motive to kill Matt? Jack said. Michelle sniffed.
I've known my dad is a ruthless motherfucker my entire life. Where do you think I learned it from?
Apparently you didn't learn his self-interest, because your loyalty, Jack put air quotes around the word, to your father will land you in prison for a long time. Anne returned.
Plead guilty to bribing a public official, and the DA will recommend probation. No jail time.
And the murder charges? Bob asked.
I suppose that depends on how good the evidence is, Anne said.
Bob nodded to Michelle, who had her arms crossed over her chest.
You want me to plead guilty to a felony? I don't think so.
Jack stood. Then take your chance with a trial. Anne still knows some of the guards up in Gainesville. Maybe she'll put in a good word for you. He and Anne started to leave.
Wait, Michelle sighed. There's a GPS tracker on Chris's car.
Why? Jack said.
Because I'm a control freak.
Does he know? She paused, looked a little panicky, but covered it quickly.
Maybe. We'll check into it, Anne said.
Better hope he didn't destroy it. Michelle laughed.
He's not that smart.
He was smart enough to frame you for 4 murders, Jack said.
Fuck you, McBride.
You fucked my brother. That's as close as you'll get.
Jack,
Bob said sternly. Stand up, Michelle, Jack said. You're under arrest.
What?
She shouted.
I just gave you Chris on a silver platter.
Bob stood and his chair fell back onto the floor in his rush.
What's going on, Jack?
You're under arrest for conspiracy to commit murder, Jack said.
Against whom?
Michelle was incredulous. Fred Muldoon. You forgot about old Fred, didn't you? Eddie delivered him to the DEA along with Kyle. Fred's been using your truck yard as a place to flop for no telling how long. He knows a lot. And he's singing, too.
An 80-year-old drunk doesn't scare me, she said.
But her expression betrayed her surprise and unease. Jack leaned on the table and got in Michelle's face. 3 witnesses have you dead to rights on this, Michelle. Fred, a federal agent, and Kyle Grant. It's a first-degree felony with a possible 99-year sentence. Add to that the case the feds are building against you and your father. Well, your grandchildren can visit you in prison. Michelle crossed her arms over her chest and met Jack's gaze.
I'm not turning on my father.
Give me Buck Pollard.
Michelle's eyes widened, and in the almost imperceptible flicker of relief, of triumph, Jack knew he had her. "He's alive, isn't he?" Jack said.
"Can you give us a minute?" Bob said.
Jack and Anne left the room.
"God damn, Jack. I hate to admit this, but with everything going on, I've almost completely forgotten about that old fucker."
"Which one? Fred or Buck?"
"Both of them."
"I wish I could forget about Pollard." Jack stared at the interview room door. "Why is she so loyal to her father?" he mused.
"Same reason you've stood by Eddie all these years."
Jack shook his head. "If Eddie lied to get me arrested for murder, I guarantee you I'd turn on him in a second." Jack pulled his phone out and dialed Tom Hunter. "What do you want to bet DI has GPS trackers on all of its vehicles?" He left a voicemail for Hunter telling him the new information.
"Think Michelle will take the bait?" asked Dan.
"She might not today, but she will. All the Doyles' assets are frozen. We get bail set high enough, she won't be able to make it. Every day she sits in jail and her father doesn't retract his statement or come to visit her gets me one day closer to nailing Buck Pollard."
Chapter 54. Ellie collapsed in her office chair, leaned her head back, and closed her eyes.
Christ, what a day. What a week.
It was another record sales day for the book bank, and it wasn't even 5 o'clock. Word came down about noon, where from no one could say, Joe Doyle was denying any knowledge of the drug operation Michelle had been running through DI for years. He was appalled that it had happened under his nose and was cooperating fully with the authorities. Customers flooded the book bank within 30 minutes, cementing its reputation for the place to be for information. Ellie wasn't sure she wanted her passion project to be known as the local gossip mill, but she couldn't deny her sales projections had been shattered. Ellie's customers were pretty evenly split on those who believed Joe and those who thought it was bullshit. Ellie liked to think the bullshit faction had voted for her, but her 30% showing at the polls belied that theory. She didn't need to hear everyone rehash what was known, suspected, or theorized about the goings-on at Doyle Industries. She knew Joe Doyle had been behind the York County drug trade for years. Hell, everyone knew it, but no one wanted to admit it, and she wasn't surprised in the least he was throwing his own daughter under the bus. Joe Doyle and Big Jake York were cut from the same bastard cloth. One thing did surprise her. She felt sorry for Michelle Doyle. The only person Michelle had left on her side was her mother, Mary, and even Ellie wasn't sure Mary would stand by Michelle. Ellie doubted Mary Doyle knew how to think for herself, and she knew Mary would do and say whatever Joe told her. Ellie allowed a small flame of triumph to burn deep within her being, a flame she would never share with anyone. Not Kelly, not that Kelly was speaking to her, or Jack, or Susan. To everyone in Stillwater, she would be classy, would take the high road when it came to Michelle's downfall, and talk of innocent until proven guilty, letting the system take its course, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see. But Ellie believed Michelle got what she deserved. Finally. Karma was a bitch, and you can't do the things Michelle had done for 30 years without those chickens finally coming home to roost. Privately, she hoped Michelle went to jail until she was old and haggard and was turned into some big, ugly, butch lesbian's wife. But Ellie would never say it or admit it, even to Jack. A knock on the door jolted her from her uncharitable thoughts. Ethan McBride lifted his hand in an awkward wave and said,
"Hey."
Ellie sat up.
"Hey. Dad told me to meet him here."
"Right. We were going to, get a bite to eat, I think. Are you hungry?"
"Yeah, I'm always hungry."
Ethan's face reddened and he looked away.
"Your dad texted and said he'd been held up."
Okay, I'll wait out here.
Ethan turned to go.
Wait.
Ellie stood, desperate to make a connection with this young man, who, if things went the way she hoped, would play a big part in her life.
We can go grab something, you and me. I can take you, if you want. It's fried chicken night at Mabel's. Have you had Mabel's fried chicken? No. It might be the best fried chicken I've ever tasted.
Ethan shrugged so half-heartedly. Ellie knew the last thing he wanted to do was to be seen with her eating fried chicken. Alone. With Jack? Maybe.
If you don't like fried chicken, Mabel's has good fried fish. Or we could get Dairy Queen, whichever. I'm good. Why don't I go to Mabel's and get two meals to go? Three. We'll save one for your dad. We can eat them upstairs in my apartment.
As soon as she said it, Ellie thought it sounded weird, as if she was trying to lure an unsuspecting teenager to her lair and take advantage of him.
God. Would people think that? No. Yes. Maybe. Or we can eat it down here in the store. I'll see if Paige wants one. We may be busy all night with everything going on. Do you always talk this much and this fast? No. I'm nervous. I want you to like me, but I'm afraid you hate me.
She stopped. Way to lay it out there, Elliot. Ethan read the sign on the inside of the safe door with instructions on what to do if you were locked in. He pointed to it and turned to her.
Seriously? There's no way out. There wasn't when this was a bank, but I had them remove the lock so you can't get trapped. There's a little window to open for oxygen.
Ethan stood on his tiptoes and opened the window.
Cool.
He opened and closed it a few times and said,
Troy and Olivia like you a lot.
Ellie smiled.
Glad to hear it. They act like you're a saint. I'm far from a saint.
Ethan stopped messing with the little window, but kept his back to her. Ellie took a deep breath and dove in.
Ethan, I love your dad very much. How is that even possible? Y'all barely know each other. Unless y'all have really been sneaking around for the last 6 weeks. We haven't, I swear to God. When your mother came back, we stopped seeing each other. You both keep saying it, but I don't know if I believe it. Why not?
Ethan fidgeted and looked away.
I can't imagine staying away from Olivia for 6 weeks.
Ellie smiled and wondered if Susan knew, or even suspected, or cared, considering everything.
It was as awful as you imagine it would be.
Ellie wanted to reach out and touch him, but knew better.
I know this is going to be weird for a while. All I ask is you give me a chance, okay?
The silence stretched uncomfortably between them. Ellie hadn't felt this nervous around a teenage boy since senior prom. Finally, Ethan said,
Fried chicken sounds good.
Ellie exhaled and smiled.
You won't regret it. I hope not.
They smiled at each other, shyly, and looked away. Did I hear someone say fried chicken? It took a moment for Ellie to associate the cop who stood in the office door with Jack McBride. Apparently, Ethan had the same problem because he burst out laughing.
Dad, you look so weird,
says the kid who's worn the same hoodie every day for a week.
It's been 2 weeks, and I like this hoodie.
I seem to remember you started wearing it around your birthday, Jack said. Someone special give it to you. Ellie was afraid Ethan's face was going to catch fire. It turned so red so quickly. Behind Ethan, she shook her head in warning to Jack. He nodded and said, too brightly not to sound forced, So, everything good? Ellie waited for Ethan to respond.
So far, so good.
Ellie felt a smile spread across her face. It wasn't much, but it was something. Then Jack had to go and push the envelope. Where's your mother?
Gone when I got home from school.
Should I ask?
She didn't leave a note.
Ethan raised his finger.
But she took her phone, so she's making progress.
How's Uncle Eddie?
Dreading the arrival of Lieutenant Governor Grandma. Ethan groaned.
Join the club. Are y'all ready? I'm starving.
Yeah, go on up front. We're right behind you. Ethan rolled his eyes and walked off.
Gross.
Jack and Ellie raised their eyebrows at each other. Ellie shrugged.
So.
We're pregnant, Jack said.
We're pregnant.
Ellie looked away and fiddled with the corner of a stack of papers on her desk. Jack stepped forward. He stilled her hand with his and said in a low voice,
You don't seem happy about it.
He put his finger under her chin and lifted her head to meet his gaze.
Are you not happy about it?
Of course I am. It's just...
She leaned her head back and searched the ceiling for what to say. Tears welled in her eyes, and her throat thickened. She closed her eyes and dropped her head.
I'm 42 years old, Jack. I'll be 60 when she graduates from high school.
So will I.
What if something's wrong with it? I've been drinking more than I should. Plus, being over 35, the chances of the baby having some sort of condition increases by...
Jack placed his fingers over her mouth, but Ellie kept talking.
I don't know how much, but a lot. Jane wants me to run for mayor. Apparently, she thinks I'm supposed to save the town. Save it from what is what I want to know. And there's rumors Doyle's going to resign as city councilman even before he takes office, which will mean they'll appoint me. And I think Jane is dying, and she said once in an offhand comment, but Jane never makes offhand comments, that she's leaving the bank to me. I mean, come on.
Jack laughed. Ellie, stop. He put his hands on her hips and pulled her toward him. He brushed the tears from her cheeks and pushed her hair behind one ear.
I don't care about any of that other stuff. The town and Jane Maxwell can go to hell. All I care about is you, Ethan, and the little baby inside there.
He placed his hand over her stomach.
I'm not going to tell you everything will be okay. It might not, but worrying about it won't change it. We'll deal with whatever comes when it comes. Together.
He grinned.
Stop grinning.
Why? That was a good speech. Oscar worthy.
It wasn't that good.
It was pretty damn good.
This is not a joking matter. This is serious.
He pulled her closer, still grinning. It's very serious.
Wait.
Ellie pushed on his chest and leaned back slightly.
If you're too close, you're blurry. See what I mean?
She tossed her hand in the air.
I won't even be able to see our baby up close.
Ellie wouldn't remember what she meant to say until later that night. Jack's head pillowed on her bare stomach, her fingers running through his hair, staring up at the ceiling of her parents' old bedroom, Ethan sleeping on the other side of the wall, apparently at peace with Jack and Ellie's relationship. For now. Ellie's hand stilled.
Jack.
He lifted his head, kissed her stomach, and rested it back, now facing her.
Hmm?
She told him about her fight with Kelly. By the time she was finished, he was cradling her in his arms. He kissed her temple.
I'm sorry.
Ellie sniffed loudly.
I thought you should know.
She'll come around.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Jack tightened his embrace. Ellie settled her head on his chest and placed her hand over his heart.
You aren't having second thoughts, are you?
He said.
No, never.
She was afraid she said it too quickly, but Jack didn't seem to notice. She knew this was right, that Jack was the man she was meant to share her life with. Still, as his breathing deepened and his embrace softened, Ellie couldn't sleep, both nervous and excited by the idea that her ordered, predictable life was about to change, in wonderful and terrifying ways. This concludes The Fisher King by Melissa Lenhart. Narrated by P.J. Oakland. Copyright 2016 by Melissa Lenhart. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Skyhorse Publishing Incorporated and was produced in the year 2021 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.